I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's the Palm Coast City Council. It's Tuesday, May 16, 2017. Please join me in the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Holland?
Here.
Vice Mayor Nobile?
Here.
Councilmember Cuff?
Here.
Councilmember Clufus?
Here.
Councilmember Shibley?
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the May 2nd, 2017 City Council Business and the May 9th, 2017 City Council Workshop.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to the second reading of Agenda Item Number 2, which is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman?
Yes, Madam Mayor. This is an ordinance rezoning 50 acres, more or less, from suburban estate, or EST1, with about 8 acres to general commercial, or COM2, and about 42 acres to multifamily residential, or MFR2, pursuant to application number 3247. Mayor, Council, again, this is the second reading, and this is a quasi-judicial matter. So if there have been any ex parte communications, these need to be disclosed at this time.
Any ex parte communications?
This would be ex parte communications since the first reading.
None.
None. Seeing none.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council. This is the second reading of this rezoning hearing. It's a little unusual in the fact that the applicant requested a delay after the first reading, so it's been a few weeks. We don't have any changes. No issues have come up. Normally, we just say we're ready for final action, but because it's been a few weeks, I've asked staff to do a shortened version of the project as a reminder and also for the public. So, Bill, if you'll take it from here.
Good morning. Winschant Country Manor is located on the west side of US 1, approximately 1/2 mile south of Palm Coast Parkway, and it's proposed to be rezoned from EST1 or suburban estates to multifamily residential 2 and general commercial. Future land use map, which governs all our rezonings, designates the entire 50 acres as mixed use, and it specifically allows both the MFR2 and the COM2 zoning in that district. The site's been used for agricultural purposes since before Palm Coast was incorporated. The area in brown is the portion that's proposed for the multifamily. It's about 42 acres. And the area in red closest to US 1 is proposed for general commercial. Both the planning staff and the planning board recommend approval to City Council to rezone the 50 acres from EST1, with 42 acres going to multifamily and 8 acres going to general commercial for the Winschant Country Manor application number 3247. And staff's here for any questions you have, as well as the applicant.
Any questions, council members? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make comment on agenda item number 2, please do so at this time.
Jack Carroll, Palm Coast. What's considered general commercial?
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Any member from staff wish to?
General commercial is that's our middle commercial district, and what's probably most prevalent throughout the city. It's also known as COM2.
Okay, council, any discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to agenda item number 3, which again is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman?
Yes, Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning maps established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance amends the official zoning map for approximately 17.5 acres, more or less, which is a parcel generally located 800 feet north of Matanzas Woods Parkway, west of Londonbury, and as legally described in an exhibit to the ordinance as Exhibit A. We're rezoning from multifamily residential MFR1 to single-family residential 1, SFR1, providing for conflict, severability, non-codification, and it provides for an effective date. This is the first reading and, again, quasi-judicial. So if there have been any ex parte communications, those need to be disclosed to the public at this time.
Any member?
Mayor, City Council, this is another in a series of rezoning. This is where planners had a little experiment to put multifamily in the middle of one of our residential areas. That it was not been popular whatsoever, and so staff has actually been working with the property owners of those parcels to revert them back to single family, and this is one of those. So Jose is going to provide you with the details.
Good morning, Mayor and members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department Planning Division. This particular rezoning, consistent with our land development code, we did hold a neighborhood meeting for the proposed rezoning of this parcel. So for that, all property owners within 300 feet were notified, and that neighborhood meeting was held on April 12th of this year. Although we had sparse attendance, we did receive other calls from surrounding residents. And to summarize the outcome, the residents, of course, spoke in favor of the proposed rezoning. So the subject parcel that we're going to look at today is about 17.5 acres, and it's generally located just north of Matanzas Woods Parkway on the west side of Londonderry Drive, and it's highlighted in blue there, and it's currently vacant. It currently has a designation, a future land use map designation of residential, and as you can see, its current zoning is for multifamily residential, one. And the property owners have come in at this time and requested that zoning be changed to single-family residential one. Just a quick comparison of the development standards between SFR1, single-family, and MFR1, the multifamily. So here the big difference is that I would just highlight that the maximum building height in multifamily is 50 feet, whereas in single family it's 35 feet. There's really not a big difference in the maximum density that could be allowed. MFR1 allows 8 dwelling units per acre, while single family residential permits 7 dwelling units per acre. The big difference would be that as a single family zoning district, the development would be limited to single family residential units, whereas MFR1 permitted townhouses and also multifamily. This is just a draft of a plat that the property owner has submitted or asked this staff to look at preliminarily. And under the proposal, he would limit himself to 50 single family lots with one access from Londonderry Drive. And by limiting the development to 50 single-family lots, it eliminates the need for a secondary means of ingress and egress. Looking at the different criteria for a rezoning, we find that the proposed zoning map amendment is consistent with the surrounding properties, proposed single-family use on the single-family residential zoning district is consistent with the surrounding land uses. It's not contrary to or in conflict with the public interest, and it does accomplish a legitimate public purpose. It is consistent with a comprehensive plan, again, here in that the proposed rezoning of the lot, it's a lot that's considered infill development. It's within a developed subdivision, developed area with available infrastructure. It does not cause a significant financial liability or hardship on the city, again, in that the public facilities are available proximate to the site. and that there's no significant impact in the environment. The site will be subject to further review and permit requirements when it comes in at the preliminary plat and final plat stage. There's no threat to general health, safety, and welfare of the community. It does comply with other local, state, or federal it still will need to comply with other local, state, and federal regulations. The potential uses on the site are compatible with the surrounding uses, and again, will be subject to those to further development review in the future. So at this time, planning staff, as well as the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board, have recommended approval of the proposed rezoning. And beyond this first reading, we will have a second public hearing scheduled probably for June. The property owner will still need to submit a subdivision master plan, and from there go to the preliminary and final plat stage, where they divide the land into those 50 lots. So at this time, staff, that concludes staff presentation.
Any questions, council members? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public. Any member from the public wish to make public comment, please do so at this time.
I have only one thing to say about this, and I'm not against it. It's just that I don't like it when it only has one way to get in and one way to get out. Should be two, at least two, for emergency purposes. Always, I think we should always look at that. Emergencies happen so quickly, and you need both ways of getting in and out. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. As far as Lewis's comments, I know we have a threshold of 50 homes as far as it tripping that emergency evacuation area for both ends. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. Our comprehensive plan policy is that 50 units or less only need that required one access. The other issue with this land is that it's, in essence, it's landlocked as to another way in and out of the property. They would have to cross other private properties to get to a second access. And the other issue with that is that we previously had a site plan for multifamily development on this site, where the only way to get another access easement would be directly in the backyard of those developed residential lots right on Londonderry. And so I believe that in this particular instance, the issue of having only one access in and out of the site is consistent with our comprehensive plan, and it's probably in the best interest of the neighborhood in that we don't need to require them to provide that access directly in somebody's, adjacent to somebody's backyard.
And would you say the 50 homes is sort of a standard practice across the board universally with other communities?
That's correct. Well, at least in our comprehensive plan, that's been our policy. 50 or less, no requirement. And we've approved other developments that are 50 or less with only one access. So it's very consistent.
And I'll just add, this is Ray Tyner, planning manager. You know, during the platting and the construction plans, one of the things that we look at is firewise protection, too. So, you know, some of the lands, adjacent lands that are budding it, we would make sure that it's, you know, a firewise community and safer fire. In addition, the Matanzas neighborhood itself, the whole neighborhood, you know, if something were to happen within that neighborhood, there are other ways out from a hole, from a big picture, more than one access. So,
great, thank you. Council members, any questions or discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to agenda item number 4, which is another ordinance.
Yes, Mayor, Council. This is the heirs' property identified as such in this rezoning application and ordinance. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map. It's established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance amends the official zoning map for approximately 5 acres, more or less. It's a parcel generally located north of Matanzas Woods Parkway. again, east of Londonderry Drive and south of Longview Lane, and it's legally described in an exhibit to the ordinance as Exhibit A, rezoning from multifamily residential 2, MFR2, to single-family residential 2, or SFR2, and preservation, which is also designated as PRS, to these zoning districts. This ordinance provides for conflict severability, non-codification, and for an effective date. Mayor, Council, last and again, but not least, this is a first reading of a quasi-judicial matter, so if there have been any ex-party communications for the public's sake, and to make it legal, please disclose those at this time.
Any ex-parte? Seeing none? Okay.
Mayor, City Council, this is a same neighborhood, same approach, but much smaller parcel, and Jose is going to give you details on this one.
Sure. Just for the record again, Jose Papa with the Community Development Department. And since this next subject parcel is approximate to the previous subject parcel that we looked at, and so in this instance, staff held a joint neighborhood meeting for the two parcels, because really the impact of the two separate zonings would be felt within this specific particular area in Matanzas Woods. And again, the outcome would be the same, that the neighborhood spoke generally in favor of the proposed rezoning. So looking at the location of the subject parcel, as you can see, it's highlighted here. It's about 5.5 acres, mainly fronts on Matanzas Woods Parkway. But it does have access to it from, that would be Longview Lane and also Long Place. And in this case, if you can just look to the northwest of that subject parcel, that's that previous 17.5-acre parcel that we looked at. So here also, the future land use map designation of the parcel is residential. Its current zoning of the subject parcel is multifamily residential too. And what the property owner has agreed to or proposes is to rezone that parcel to single family residential and preservation. What you can see on that map, in the proposed map, is some shaded areas, and that represents some drainage easements that are already entitled or dedicated to the city. That's in that proposed zoning map on the, I guess it would be my right. Again, general comparison of single family residential 2 and MFR2. Again, the big difference would be a decrease in the maximum building heights, a decrease in the maximum density permitted from 12 dwelling units to 5 dwelling units per acre. And finally, of course, the big difference would be the permitted uses allowed within each zoning district. Whereas MFR2 allowed townhouses and multifamily, single family residential 2 limits development to single-family residential units. Looking at the criteria, very similar similar analysis and findings with the previous zoning map amendment. The zoning, again, is more consistent with the surrounding properties. It is consistent with a comprehensive plan. In this case, again, you have the available infrastructure adjacent to the site. This is an infill lot within a developed subdivision. The site does not cause a significant financial liability or hardship on the city in that it is proximate to the existing water and sewer lines. There's no significance to the environment. A majority of the site will be dedicated for preservation, which would serve as a buffer between Matanzas Woods Parkway and the residential uses in that area. Again, the potential uses on site are compatible with surrounding uses and will still be subject to further review as we go further down the development path. So at this time, planning staff and planning board is recommending approval of the proposed rezoning to the City Council. And from here, this application will follow similar steps as the previous application, with a second public hearing before City Council, a subdivision of a master plan, and a preliminary final site plan. That concludes staff presentation.
Council members, any questions or comments?
I just have one, Jose. Do you have the future zoning map, the proposed zoning map?
Yes, sir.
My qu- question was the approximate size of that the residential two portion of the piece to the west.
Sure.
The west,
what's the on the west?
Yeah. What's the acreage? The one on Long Place.
That would be adequate to accommodate about two SFR two. It's about 20,000 square feet.
That was what I was asking. Is approximately how many houses would they be able to get on there?
On the western side,
yeah,
definitely two.
In the eastern side, one or two.
One or two, and that would be determined when the owner goes through a formal survey of the site. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
One question. So the 5.2 acres number here are the two parcels on the east and west, right? Not the preservation area?
No. The 5.2 acres represents the whole site.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that's 20,000 feet, that doesn't make much sense. Okay, thank you.
Now we'll open up to public. Any member from the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 4, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. We'll now move to consent agenda. Any member from the public wish to make a comment on agenda item number 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Moved.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Now move to public participation, the portion of the agenda where the public is to speak on items not on the agenda. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Got a handout.
I think he's speaking, sir.
Steve Carr. Around April 17th, the FDOT came out with their traffic map about the area. And Florida Park Drive increased to 8,600 cars per day and 645 trucks per day. This amount is about 3,000 more than Palm Harbor or Old Kings Road. And the traffic fumes and the noise and the dust is really playing havoc on the health of the residents. And we're really concerned because Mr. Landon not long ago said that the traffic in that area was going to double. And there's nothing there to decrease the traffic. I gave you a handout of some new reports that came out. It says toxic air pollution particles found in human brains. And back in the report, there's a thing that I wanted to read also. It says, knowledge is power. So if there's at least a possibility that exposure to traffic pollution is having even worse health impacts than when previously known, then take steps you can reduce your dose as far as you can. And then the second report there, it says air pollution linked to increased mental illness in children. Says a major new study has linked air pollution to increased mental illness in children, even at low levels of pollution. All I'm doing is asking, is presenting information and asking the city to really take a look at Florida Park Drive. How can we reduce that traffic? It is really playing havoc on the health and lives of the residents. And sometimes we feel like that traffic's more important than our health and our lives over there. So we just ask the city to take a look at it and do what they can to reduce the traffic. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Perry. I am homeless. At this moment right now, I am a Palm Coast resident. For 27 years, I live and grew up and pay taxes here. Steve Nobile watched me go from a really bad boy to a really good man. I am a sex crime victim, and the Flagler County Sheriff's Office, who has jurisdiction, won't help me. I want help reporting the numerous crimes committed against me. I want justice for me, but even more, I want there to be a greater conversation about sexual abuse to begin. There are a lot of families who hide and cover up sexual abuse to protect family names and secrets. People who prey on children and don't understand the word no do not deserve protection. I am well within my statute of limitations to report these crimes that the Sheriff's Department won't help me with. If you do not act, you not only fail to serve me, but you allow for a greater conversation about sexual abuse to go unspoken. As I've shared my story, I've learned many more people are victims of abuse than we even know, all for the sake of protecting abusers. I want my story to be public knowledge. I want to share how heinous sexual abuse is and how it affects people's perceptions on life and love. Whatever you think you know of me is only what you or others want to believe. For public record, I will share with the city a small part of my story. So will you help me ensure the Flagler County Sheriff's Office will do their job? Will you stand with me and all other sex crime victims? Or will you sit in silence? The choice is yours. Stand against sex crimes or sit in support of them. What will you do? I hope you'll be a voice for all the victims left crying in silence. Sex abuse should not be a secret. Please let me know your answer, because I'm going to leave Palm Coast for a final time if you're not willing to help.
Next speaker.
Excuse me. Good morning, George Mayo, Palm Coast. Just last week, a bicyclist was hit at the intersection of Beltair and 100 there. And seeing as how I'm through that intersection every day multiple times, cars heading west on 100 turning right onto Beltair going north, and cars heading south on Beltair and turning right going west on 100 many times come to a California stop. I've seen it many times. I've seen people crossing in the crosswalk and have to jump out of the way for cars who disregard stopping and allowing people in the crosswalk. That intersection is as large and as busy as the one at Cypress Point and Palm Coast, and as large as the one at Palm Coast Parkway and Old Kings. Both those intersections, you have a neon light which turns on with a right turn arrow with a slash through it, stopping cars, preventing cars from turning right at different times according to the lights, the way they are set. At the very least, I would like to see, hopefully, you can maybe talk about it in a workshop and get that put up at that intersection for both those lanes. With the addition of Aldi coming in, that it, I would say, is only going to increase foot traffic. You always have high school students crossing through there. There are several people in electric wheelchairs that I know live in the area I see going by all the time. And it's just dangerous. I see, you know, cars that are disregarding, you know, stopping and giving these people the right of way. So I'm hoping you can look into it. And I'm sure there are many, I've talked about other intersections, there are intersections being looked at. But this one being this large and after this accident, I hope this can be put on the front burner and maybe at least put those neon lights up. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Take it back. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Carr. We continually look at ways to improve the health and wellness of our residents, and we will read your report. Thank you. Mr. Perry, the Sheriff's Department is an individual governing agency within this county that oversees criminal activity within our community, so I would encourage you to reach out to Mr. Carmen in the back room, who is our liaison. Thank you. And Mr. Landon, if you can speak to George as far as that intersection.
Mr. Carmen is part of the problem.
Yes, I'd be happy to. First of all, I think we've all experienced it, and that is a classical place where people do not stop when on red to turn right. And it is a problem with pedestrians. There's no question about it. It's a state highway, so it's not in our jurisdiction to control. But I can tell you this, that FDOT has that on their plans here soon. Their definition is soon, maybe hopefully within the next year or so, to make improvements to that intersection. We also have plans on the south side on Beltaire to put right turn lanes. So there are efforts to try to make some improvements there. The difference with this intersection versus the one referred to at Cypress and Palm Coast Parkway or Old Kings Road is the reason for the no right turn is because of the left turn movement. There's two lanes going into three lanes, and so it's really a different turning movement. What I do think, and Carmen has had to leave, but Sheriff Staley has started a program to do focused enforcement at certain intersections to try to improve driver behavior. And I will, if you would like, I think it would be a good idea to ask them to include this intersection for that one specific reason. Particularly, I think the school's about out. We only got another week of school. But next fall, summer, school starts in August. Hard to call that fall now. But to have them really beef up now and but once again during that time when you have students out there. So I think if we can maybe some people see get pulled over for not stopping, that would probably be the most effective. Plus, we'll work with FDOT with their improvements at that intersection.
Thank you. Now move to agenda item number E, which is discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Councilmember Cuff.
Just one brief item, and I think it would probably be more appropriate for a workshop, but directed to Mr. Reichman or whoever may be our Tallahassee liaison for an update on what happened, particularly with respect to the preemption bills. I kind of lost a couple in the flurry there, and we may have a special session coming up. So I would, for one, at least on the council, appreciate a executive summary update. I don't want to sound lazy, but we're wading through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of legislation like gas station price sign regulations and things like that. But I'm not sure whether they passed or not, you know, and I should be.
I can't give you an update on the gas station bill.
No. Well, I was just an example.
But I do have in front of me something, and I'm sure all of you have received it as well. This was this was from the Full League of Cities.
Yeah.
And I raise these issues not to try to avoid doing executive summary. Certainly happy to do that. I will say that as of last Friday, you've got a lot of bills that are sitting on the governor's desk.
Oh, that's yeah,
and
that's
so fun. If I were to say today what ultimately will happen, it would involve a little bit of speculation. I can tell you that as you are correct, Councilmember Cuff, there are several of those bills that are on the governor's desk involve express preemption of issues that are arguably very important to the residents of Palm Coast and other cities. One of which we've talked about, which is the wireless technology, which has passed. We're waiting to see what happens. That one has a huge impact. There is a bill waiting for the governor, SB 80, on public records and attorney's fees associated with frivolous requests. Again, we're waiting to see. The homestead exemption. Looks like we're going to all local governments are in 2018, or we're going to see how that's going to impact our ad valorem taxes. That's going to potentially have a huge impact on the revenues that are available to local governments going forward after that vote on that referendum. And what was signed, and this was something actually has come up before this council before, and that is a preemption about the Uber and Lyft. I'm sure all of you are aware of that. So, and that has been in the news and a lot of other local governments recently, some of the experiences they've had. But that is now regulated such as it is by the state of Florida. And also another topic that we have been discussing, and that is the medical marijuana. Nothing did happen. And Councilmember Cuff, maybe that's what you were referring to in the special session. I have read and heard that there is discussion about calling a special session for that. The governor vetoes the budget, then that will obviously require a special session. I did want to comment as far as for the city of Palm Coast on our medical marijuana regulations or lack thereof. Remember, you may remember we have a moratorium, and that goes through September 2nd. And as it turns out, I think September 2nd or the time leading to that probably was a good idea. I think we all hope that there would be clear guidance by now, but there isn't. And so if the legislature doesn't do anything, as all of you are aware, then the Department of Health and state of Florida will be passing or creating certain regulations. And then we will, I know that your staff and I are looking forward to seeing where that goes so that we can prepare an appropriate set of local regulations as well. And Councilmember Cuff, certainly this is just an update. This is not what finally. So if you would allow me to have a little bit more time. The governor has, I think, 10 days, if I'm...
It's appropriate also for our lobbyists to create an executive summary. I mean, I'm assuming he does that.
He's going to know more than I will, absolutely. I read what you read, folks, and I try to keep abreast of it as much as I can.
I think it'd be appropriate for Doug Bell to write an executive summary following session.
He will do that. The League of Cities also does a summary. We'll pass that on to you.
But definitely more particular to our priorities, what we were talking about and addressing.
Right, and that's, combination. The League will do more citywide, but Doug Bell will focus on the ones that we've expressed. I would strongly recommend you wait until the governor passes or signs or doesn't sign, because otherwise you're going to get more speculation.
That's fine.
We can do it sooner if you prefer.
I wasn't asking for any particular time frame, just, now that the legislature is at least temporarily out of session and we're presumably safe for a few weeks.
We will do a written summary. We will do a written summary, and then we also provide a summary at a workshop for you.
Okay. Thank you. Is that all your comments?
That's my only comment.
Vice Mayor Nabil.
I have on my calendar, this is a pop-up that it's just some follow-up questions. First, and I didn't work with Mr. Carr on this. It just happened to pop up like this. But we had discussed banning trucks on Florida Park.
Right.
And where are we with that?
We put up the cameras, and I have not received a report as to... Okay, so we have to go look at the footage. And... Once again, I get pictures of construction traffic. Well, if you've got a home being built in the area, you're going to have a truck. So we're trying to focus on those that delivering to the convenience stores or something that don't need to be using this or using it as a cut-through. So we're working
in the process.
On that. Yes.
Okay. I don't remember if we discussed this, but Prosperity 2021. I thought we talked about maybe doing a review
Yes,
because it's about the middle. Excuse me. It's about halfway through.
We actually have it's intern season, if you can believe that already. And so we have Bo has hired an intern to help with some of those items regarding Prosperity 2021 and our retail recruitment and some of those other issues associated with economic development. So we are actually doing kind of a comprehensive look at that, but using some. Business majors in college that can help us. So,
and then you're going to bring that to us?
Yes.
I got charter review. We're not going to talk about that. And I got PEP system boxes. We talked about that last week.
Yep.
So I'm good, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Two items. First, I received a phone call and subsequent email about these signs going up about medical marijuana prescription, some scam that's going on.
Yep.
Have we found out who's doing that, A. B, are the signs still going up? And do we have a plan other than just taking them down?
Mr. Carman is detained. Okay. I can tell you that we take them down as soon as we see them. It is a scam. It's not just Palm Coast. It's a regional. I know it's up in Jacksonville. Mayor, I'll have to get people to give you an update as to whether or not we've found who's putting them up, and so we can get to the root of it, hopefully prevent them.
I think it's important for the public to understand if they see these signs and dial the number, they ask for like $169 for this prescription plan or something for medical marijuana, and it's not legit.
Yeah, it is exactly that. It's a scam. So, you know, just trying to get that word out. Maybe Cindy can. Maybe we need to do a work with sheriff's office and get some information out. If that we could do that, we'll have Cindy work with the sheriff's office and try to get a press release out. Hopefully, the media will help us.
I just would hate people that actually need medical marijuana and are suffering to call this number and get scammed by this, knowing that the discussions are going on statewide.
Yes.
So.
Scam is just to get the $139 or whatever.
We believe so.
Are they trying to establish a client-patient history because you need to have? So there's regulations along how long you have to actually be with a doctor before you can be prescribed that. Is that what they're trying to facilitate? Or I'm sure this is
opportunistic.
I
really do not know.
To say that nicely.
I think Jay Marr had called the number of one of the signs, and it was literally just take your money, and that was it.
Only need the last four digits of the Social Security number.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's concerning because it's in our community. It's happening in our community. I have not seen the signs, but I got a call that they were popping up at several locations. So I don't know who's doing it, but whoever is needs to stop. So, and the second item I want to bring up, I've been reading our meeting policies and procedures of our meetings and the governing rules, and I just wanted to make sure that I was running the meeting as professionally and efficiently and effectively as possible. And one of the rules I think is important that we'd really need to act on is not having discussions necessarily between council members, but all discussions going through the mayor and then the mayor addressing those issues or concerns, allowing and requesting the speaker to speak. So there's certain things that I read that we're not adhering to our rules and policies that I really want to remind the council that I think it's important that we adhere to. So I'm asking in the future for all sorts of, if you have a comment during meetings, to please address the mayor in advance, so we'll keep a routine on who is to speak and when. And I think there was one other thing on it. Just to reiterate, Mr. Reichman, you're also the parliamentarian, so is there anything that you reviewed that would be notable to mention during this discussion?
Who knew that when I was taking the test in middle school that I would grow up to be a parliamentarian? never saw that coming. But yes, Mayor, you know, you guys are in charge of your own rules and procedures, and the set of rules and regulations that I always bring with me is that which was adopted by a prior council in 2008, believe it or not, and we've only updated it several times since then, one responsive to a change in state law about public input. But as the mayor indicated, this council has given certain powers to the mayor as the presiding officer, and when you read through this section of the rules, and really the whole theme of a lot of the rules is about order and decorum, and so when you read the rules about how the public is, you know, the rights of the public to come up during each and every agenda item and under the public participation, there's this balancing against the ability to communicate, but also to maintain order and decorum. you know, you go back and you look at what the basis of these rules are. You certainly want government to work as efficiently and effectively as possible. So, yes, there are certain provisions in your rules and regulations providing for powers and responsibilities of the mayor as the presiding officer, and one of which is what the mayor referenced, and specifically says all questions and comments are to be directed through the mayor. And then it goes in the very next sentence, says to preserve decorum and order. So really, that's the whole purpose of it. And an observation, and that is that this morning we're here for a business meeting, and we certainly are a little more formalistic when we have these business meetings, and yet this city, like many other cities, but even more so, we conduct a lot of our good business at workshops, and workshops have a tendency to be less formal and more of a discussion. But the rules do still apply to workshops, and it's the balancing, if you will, between being able to be productive through a discussion, but also at the same time to try to keep that discussion moving forward. So the mayor has the power to call to order a member of the city council. That's in the same section dealing with the rules. And then the other provisions that deal with decorum, they deal with public about order. And occasionally we see examples. And I go to a lot of meetings, including those here in the city, code enforcement meetings, and the PLDRB, where there are times when you need the people sitting in the back row. You feel more comfortable with folks there because things can get out of control, and it can happen quickly, and it can be scary. And so dealing with the public, we've got our rules, council rules and procedures there. But also there's the decorum provisions and the rules and regulations, rules and procedures directed to this council as a body, as to be an efficient and productive body, to refrain from attacking each other and questioning our motives, and again, recognizing the mayor as having, you all have given the responsibility to the mayor to try to enforce these things. It's not necessarily a job that's a lot of fun, but it's something that this council has, or prior councils in this council have placed upon her mantle. So I think that's really the objective of this, and that's how I look at it as a parliamentarian, to try to balance, to work with this council to balance the productivity and the professionalism with trying to move individual agenda items forward.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's all I have. So we will move to city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
I haven't spoken this much in years, so I have nothing further.
Should I adjourn?
No. Oh, we want you to.
You're making a habit out of this, aren't you?
Actually, yes, a lot of good things going on. First, let me remind you that this is a 5-Tuesday month, which means you get next Tuesday off. Your next workshop is May 30th, right after Memorial Day. And this is your last meeting for Memorial Day, so a reminder that we do have the celebration there at Heroes Park Memorial Day morning. But before that, today, we got Food Truck Tuesday right here, Central Park, very popular. It's from 5 to 8. And then the other thing I would announce is the Mayor's Healthy Community Challenge. It's underway. A lot of activities in that area. Cindy has me a list here. I'll try to get through it. This Thursday morning at 8:30 at Longs Creek Nature Preserve, Denise Bevan will guide a little nature walk. If you are never been around Denise and talking about critters and nature, she's that would be worthwhile. Saturday morning, Mayor Holland has a little walk around Central Park right here. So that's 9 o'clock this Saturday morning. Next Tuesday, May 23rd at 9 a.m. At Frida Zamba Pool, we're going to offer a free Aquazuma class. Whatever Aquazuma is. So
Sounds like
if you
low speed.
Want to see all the activities and get more information, it's you can go to our website, www.palmcoastgov.com/healthy. So with that, wish you all a happy Memorial Day, and that's all I have, Mayor.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.